on 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Kia ora and g'day and welcome to the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show live from the John Smith Stadium in front of a live audience. We've got a rammed house up here at the fantastic suite at the John Smith Stadium. I have a few boys in the house as well. Let me just start down the bottom. We have club ambassador and true Giants legend. It is none other than Earl Crabtree.
Good evening, Robbie.
And next to him, we have the Super League star. That is none other than Michael Lawrence.
Evening, Robert.
And we also have club coach Supremo. We have the man who got him right next to me himself, Simon Woolford.
Thanks for having me, Robbie. Good to be here, mate.
I don't know why I'm yelling. I can hear myself loud and clear in these big cans. Boys, how's it going?
Yeah, going well. Two games to go. We've hit some injuries over the last couple of weeks, which haven't helped. But luckily, we got the runs on the board over the last 4 months, and we can get through the next 2 weeks, hopefully with a win tomorrow night against Wigan, and then we head to the Catalan for our final round. So it's important we finish the season well. We can still finish fifth on the ladder at the end of the year, and that's our aim at the moment. So it's important we play well tomorrow night.
And we are going to get back into that. And this is a rugby league show, but generally in the first segment of the show, we're never that serious about that rugby. You've gone straight into it, Simon. You're absolutely brilliant. I want to know what you think about the weather. Well, you brought the sunshine with you. Thank you very much. We all give him a round of applause for that. So when you came, the sun didn't stop shining. It's been absolutely brilliant, especially on the Giants themselves. And we've had one of the best summers I've ever experienced here. And I've been here 25 years. But the wind's turned up. It's not that cold, but what do you reckon to this? Do you get this sort of weather back home?
Well, I lived in Canberra for 15 years, so we did get it quite a bit, but the first 4 months certainly did lead me into a false sense of security, that's for sure. I forgot that the winter was coming, but today was as close to winter as it's got since I've been here. I mean, I think I've only worn a jumper three or four days in 4 months I've been here, so I can't complain. But no, it was a bit ordinary today, particularly the wind. What we trained today, and it was a bit ordinary, but I'm ready. I'll be ready for the winter, Robbie.
That's what they all say. You know, I reckon if you're born here, you don't get ready for the winter. Like, you ever look at these guys in their eyes? They know winter's coming, and there's that darkness in the back of your eyes.
You can feel it, can't you? The fires are starting now as well. Everyone's put the fires on. He's only worn a jumper a couple of times. Wait till snow comes. You won't be going out on a jumper.
You know what? You know what I love about Australians? They think Canberra's cold. They honestly think Canberra's cold. And you know what? You know, every now and again it might get down to like where it gets frosty. And you see a sheen of frost on the ground?
I've seen snow a couple of times in 15 years.
That's it, up on the top of the mountains. Not where he lives. Yeah, up on the top of the mountains or on a postcard.
Actually played in a game in the snow once in 2005, I think it was. It snowed. We didn't want to go. We put our head out the door to see what was happening in the reserve grade game, and it was snowing. And I remember Laurie Daly saying, should we call it off? But no, we got through it. Leslie Vanicarlo actually played in that game. And he dived to score a try, and he asked for some hot water to put on his old fella because he dived through the snow. You know Les well.
Oh, I do know Les well. And to be honest, it's not that impressive an old fella as well.
So you would only
need a little bit of hot water.
Imagine it.
I'm only joking, Les. We're good. He's a long way in New Zealand. It's the other side of the world. But on that, we can all get up for one game in the snow. Do you know what I mean? If it's just a one-off thing. But when it's a daily occurrence and the whole of West Yorkshire comes to a standstill and you can't, I want you to text me. And say, yeah.
I'm actually going home for 6 months at the end of next week.
Make sure you bring that weather back again. Make sure you bring. Well, me and Big Earl down the bottom there. Last Saturday?
Yeah.
We joined in a Rugby League Cares sponsorship, Tough Mudder. And I've got to admit, Earl's what, 6'7"?
6'6". Come on, let's be honest.
6'6"? Is it 6'6"?
And you are 5'1".
I am 5'2".
Yeah.
I'm about, look, with my heels on, my Cubans on, I'm about 5'9", 5'10". Depends if I got my hair spiked up or not. But I basically, for 10 miles, had to carry Earl around him. It was painful.
He's kidding
he
himself.
He was crying. He was carrying on whining. Oh, this is
you
too
you can tell
hard.
By him telling this story.
I got
quite
mud in my hair.
Now, I believe that.
That did happen.
The nut in the hair.
Yeah. No, it was actually you, Robbie. We all know this. And you actually set off, and it was great, actually. So Robbie actually warmed up about 100 people doing the Hacker at the beginning. So we did pretty much a war
it
dance.
It was half a Hacker.
Everyone joined in. It was absolutely fantastic. Everyone was raring to go. And Robbie's given a flare. And he's set off at the beginning. He's holding this flare. It's like Jurassic Park, you know, everyone following him. He looked like an absolute hero. I mean, I was in love for a second. I thought it was absolutely amazing.
They were filming us, so you can just imagine the film was going to be set in slow-mo as we were all striding towards.
And within about 5 minutes, he had to stop because his Achilles were hurting him. And it just all went backwards.
Put it into context. I had cycled 320 miles from off-road from Manchester to Wembley the week before and hurt my Achilles. But still, and when Rugby League Cares came calling and they said, we need someone to fill in the gap, and I said, look, my leg's in bits and pieces, but I will do it for you. I will go the extra mile.
It's commitment.
And we were good.
Mate, you didn't even make the extra mile. I think you made about 100 metres.
I tell you what, though, we had Gareth Ellis, Andy Lynch, and your brother, Aaron. Yep. Was it just us four?
It was Lynchair, it was Senior.
Oh, Keith Senior. And Keith Senior. And so it was us five representing Rugby League, and these were my four Māori warriors. My son Māori warriors, they were behind me. I tell you what, I'll give it to that crowd, though. They were absolutely brilliant. So we set off like a house on fire, and it was a great challenge. But I've got to admit, I'm really disappointed with one of the boys on there. I had to be lynching. So they have got this horrible, and God knows who thinks these ideas up, but one of the challenges that you run through are basically all these little wires just hanging down, and they give you an electric shock. You know, like we've all done this before on a farm, gone up and touched the wire and got a kick and thought, oh, that's funny, won't do that again. Well, the exercise, the challenge is actually run through the middle of it, but Lynchy wouldn't do it, would he?
No, just even entertain it. He just said, nah, I'm not doing that. Just went walking around. Just walked straight around it. It was unbelievable.
I thought those Cass lads were supposed to be tough.
He really didn't actually care. Rubber League Cares, he did not care. He was going straight around that.
He didn't care at all, did he? Did he? So let's talk rugby league, eh, boys. Mike Lawrence, what's up with you?
All good. Obviously, coming to the end of the year now. Obviously, got a big game tomorrow. Not sure I can do a good job tomorrow night against Wigan.
And how's all the boys feeling?
Yeah, good. Obviously, like I said, we've got a few bodies down at the moment, but everybody that's taking the field tomorrow night, got a few young boys playing, all ready to put the best foot forward and put out a good display.
Yeah, me and Simon were talking about it off air about 10 minutes ago, just saying, look, he was having to give so many players the bad news, he can't play this week, which is a great problem for a coach to have.
Yeah.
What have you guys been drinking over the last couple of weeks? All of a sudden, just a big landslide of injuries.
I'm not too sure. It's just rugby league, isn't it? I think it's just the way it goes sometimes.
This is actually something that probably needs to be pulled apart. Is there a mentality thing? When things are going well and you get into that comfort zone, is there something that maybe collectively you put your guard down and you maybe don't look after yourself? You know, when you're having to compete for everything and you're scratching and maybe you're doing extras at home, you're making sure you're getting the right amount of sleep, but when things start working really well, you start to fall kind of maybe a little too comfortable with yourself.
I suppose you could say that, but no, I don't think so. I think it happened with us, obviously. During that run we went on, everybody were really focused, training really, really hard, and yeah, I think it showed with the way we went.
I think we had a lot of semi-final games going into that period. Simon would probably say the same thing. We went through an intense period of having to get ourselves up as a team for every single game, knowing full well if we were losing those games, well, you know, there's a potential that we'd be in that bottom four and going down. I think they invested a lot of energy, mentally, physically, and obviously going through that period, it's a tough period of time. They got through the other side, and maybe you do mentally relax a little bit because the pressure is off, but they went through that period and they were absolutely fantastic, and now picking up the injuries. I mean, it's the right time to pick them up because it is the end of the season, but for us, also for me commercially, I need us to finish a little bit higher, so that's why
commercially, when there's more players on the injured field, don't you have more players available to come and do your appearances and stuff like that for you?
Yeah, well, I managed to get Bruno and Simon. That was it. I tried after about 10 players, but they're all injured or they're resting up. But the other good thing is a lot of young players.
I think the way...
Do all your physios work at this time of night?
No. That's what's wrong with us. That's what's wrong with us. But I think the Wakefield game was critical. I mean, we were cruising in that game. We were 16-6 up, and all of a sudden we lost both wingers. We had another two. We finished the game with 13 men, and we really fell away at the back end of that second half. And I think you could really see the toll that took on the guys. You know, the air had been let out of the tyres, so to speak. And, you know, we backed up Warrington. We're okay against Warrington, but we still had some wounded guys. We lost a couple more from the Warrington game, and you could just see, as Earl said, we were playing semi-final footy for 3.5-4 months. So it's, you know, it's only natural that we've fallen away a bit. Injuries haven't helped, but we have spoken as a group about it. It's really important that we play well for the last two games, particularly tomorrow night, our last home game.
I read an article where people were talking about, you know, what is it about the spirit of the team right now from when you first come over, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you said it's all based around Jermaine McGilvery having to give up 10 quid because he doesn't get into the quick enough. He's known throughout the world of rugby league as the tightest man in rugby league.
Well, you wouldn't believe the laughs the boys get every Monday when Jermaine just sits there. And I can't repeat what he says, but... He even tries to get out a couple of it. And I must admit, a couple of times, there was two guys neck and neck, and we always said, Jerry, that's you.
Just for pure comedic value.
That's funny. When I brought it in, we actually showed all the try celebrations, and we said, we're bringing it in now, Jerry. You've got two this game. And he goes, that's not fair. Bring it in next week when we've all been warned. I said, nah. And he's shaking his head and effing hell this.
But you've got to be on. You've got to be one of the 13 on the field. He's not still trying to get on the field now that he's busted.
No, he's not.
All right, okay. We're going to go to a break now. But before we do that, let's have a look at the roads, okay?
It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show, live in the fantastic suite at the John Smith Stadium with Earl Crabtree, Michael Lawrence and Simon Wolford. Gentlemen, look, we've got to share that one. Now that Baloo's no longer head coach. Come on, Michael. Michael's just told us a story about Akuma Tai. Go on, you tell the story.
No, it's just a funny one. I remember captain's run day before a game at the stadium.
Which, just putting into context, if you don't know rugby, captain's run is probably the most important. It's the day before, it's the last run your team will have, running through all your plays before you play the game.
Yeah, and I remember Fui used to pick Kuma up on the way to training, and they got here nice and early. Fui comes in, like, probably about 8:45 before training. Training's due to start at 9:00. We're doing his warm-up, we're just about finished the warm-up, stretching up, about to go into his sets, and everybody's looking around for Akuma. And he comes jogging onto the field. Baloo's absolutely furious. He asks Akuma where he's been. He's sat in the car playing Candy Crush. he didn't play the next day.
Please tell me he's got a record. Please tell me he got a record score. But you can't get too far. You've got another story to tell, because I was in a conversation with Leroy Kudjo, and he said, look, I know Michael's on the show tonight. You got to ask him to tell the story why he had his wardrobe in his front room for 2 years.
Yeah, it was just a bad day at IKEA, really. Obviously, it's one of
a bad 2 years worth of days. I can get a bad day.
Pretty much. 20-year-old, I just moved out, so I thought, I need to buy a wardrobe. I'm living in a tiny apartment in town, so I bought a wardrobe. Thought, I'll be smart here. Obviously, my bed's in my bedroom. It wasn't that big. Thought, I'll build a wardrobe in the living room, slide it through to my bedroom. The doors were on the angle once I built this wardrobe. It took me about 2 hours. I was tacking them pins in the back for ages. I went to slide it through, couldn't get it through. I just sat on the floor because I started crying. So I just decided to put this wardrobe behind my sofa for 2 years in the living room. Just called it a bad do.
That's fair enough.
Did you think to yourself, you know what? I'm not going to do it now because I'm so angry with him. I'm not going to do it, but I'll get around to taking it down and put it back up in the room.
I thought about it. Yeah, once I tacked all them pins in the back, I just thought it's not worth it.
So at least did you use it?
Yeah, all the time, yeah. I remember being sat in the living room once. Alan Patrick with me, just watching TV. I just goes, I'm going to get changed. And I stood up off myself, I turned round and off the wardrobe. Yeah, it stayed there for 2 years until I moved out of there.
Did you leave it?
Did you take it?
Oh, no, I took it to skip after that, yeah.
Did you have it like, you know, when you were pulling it apart, was there a...
Oh, there were no technique, just smashed it up. Oh.
Yeah. And was it a sense of satisfaction, though, when you smashed it
Pretty
up?
Pretty much. I didn't make the same mistake again. I made sure to build wardrobes in the bedroom.
That story deserves a round of applause. Oh, cheers, Leroy. I actually like that one. Simon, let's talk about yourself. Talk about your career. As a player, you played with Canberra from 94 to 2006. St. George Illawarra 07 and 08, and you also played New South Wales Country, which is a representative games to play for New South Wales in the state of origin. Any memorable moments as a player? I mean, there probably are so many, but
well, we just spoke moments? About one, Robbie, when I played in the snow.
Fond memories and amazing ones.
I mean, every time, you know, particularly at Canberra, I came straight out of school and moved to Canberra. I lived, you know, in a town called Young. It was only about an hour and a half from Canberra, so it wasn't a massive move for me. But, you know, going there and getting to train with Laurie Daly and Ricky Stewart and Mal Meninga and learning my craft around those sort of guys was a real experience and something I'll always treasure. And, you know, every time I got to play an NRL game, to be honest, was a highlight. Got to play in a fair few semi-final series, but never quite got to a grand final. But yeah, plenty of good moments, and it's hard to single out anyone.
Inspiration. Which players, if they were players, coaches, were an inspiration to you? Who have you sort of anchored into, especially, you know, making the transition from being a player and going on to coaching as well?
Yeah, look, as I said, when I first got there, I went to the Raiders as a halfback, and obviously took real note of how...
All the best halfbacks get demoted to the...
Yeah, correct.
The
yeah, I only lasted 12 months there. So, yeah, I got to watch how guys like Ricky and Laurie, you know, prepared for games. They were real professionals. They were real competitors. And I sort of moulded how I wanted to be seen as a player around those guys. And I quickly learned good habits. And as a player, I was a real sponge. I took everything in. I took listening to coaches and senior players. I took everything in, and I learned as much as I could. And I was very fortunate after my first year. Craig Bellamy was my coach in the 21s. In my second year, he put me in at hooker, and I never looked back. So I got to play a couple of years behind Steve Walters, which was good. But yeah, I was very lucky going to a club like the Raiders, who were in their prime. You know, they were winning premier. They'd won in 89-90, got beat 91. So they had a lot of internationals there, and a couple of good Kiwis too, I might add. Quinton Pongia and John Lomax, Sean Hoppy, those sort of guys were there. They were a really top-notch squad, and I was very lucky to be able to train with those guys and learn my craft.
And what about coaching? Why coaching?
I'm not sure. Sometimes I ask myself that, Robbie. Look, I always wanted to have a go at coaching. When I retired, I went into some media work.
Just describe your coaching pathway as well, your journey.
Yeah. When I retired, I spent 3 years at Fox Sports doing rugby league and commentating rugby league, doing rugby league shows. And I decided that wasn't really for me, so I got into coaching. I started part-time at the Canberra Raiders.
Well, let's deal with that first. Why? Well, you know, was it going back to what you were used to, going back into that environment, the competitive environment?
Yeah, certainly. I missed...
Pulling apart the game in a way that it can actually, you can make change as opposed to just talk about it, like kind of what I do.
Yeah, no, I did. I always, you know, like I said, I actually thought when I retired I'd like to be doing the media type stuff, but I realised after a couple of years it really wasn't for me, and I really wanted to get back into that environment and, you know, learn my trade as a coach. So I was part-time at the Canberra Raiders for 4 or 5 years. I coached their Canberra Raiders Cup team, the Queanbeyan Blues, for 4 years. So I really enjoyed that, and obviously ran into Nathan Brown at a funeral of all places, and he offered me a full-time role up at the Newcastle Knights. So, I was a middles, hookers, halves type coach, and I also coached the New South Wales Cup team there. So, I really enjoyed it. I love being around the guys. I love seeing guys work hard for each other, and I like seeing them improve their game. And, the bunch we've got here, a great bunch of lads we've got here, their attitude's fantastic. And, as I've said a number of times before, I'm really glad that they've been rewarded with some wins over the last 3 or 4 months, because they've certainly deserved it.
So how did the combination come? How did the relationship start with the Huddersfield Giants? How did the conversation start?
Well, I just sort of eased my way in, to be honest. It was funny when I got the job that the team was really, really struggling, and I knew they'd be down on confidence and they had guys injured. So I had a bit of a plan to how I was going to work it when I got here. But in those 2 or 3 weeks when I was waiting for my visa, we started to change things. I had a couple of wins, and when I got here, it was pretty easy, to be honest. The boys were buzzing, and they were wanting to work hard for each other. And, you know, they weren't a bunch that were moping around kicking stones. They were actually upbeat, and they wanted to get better. And they had a fair bit of confidence for a team that was that had the start of the year that they had. So my job was really easy. We made some changes. You know, we did a lot of work early on the changes we wanted to make. The guys bought in. They bought in really well, and I think you can see that the way they've played, that they've bought into the changes we've made. And you know, we got some wins early, and we got some momentum and a little bit of confidence, and we kept players on the field, and all those things, you know, led to a fantastic run. And you know, I was just really stoked for the guys, at seeing them win as many games as they did.
All right. Well, actually, I do want to talk to you a little bit more about this, going a little bit deeper. So we'll pick that up. We're going to go to another ad break now. And when we do that, when we come back, we'll be hearing from more from the boys and from Simon. So stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2. On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live here at the Fantastic Suite in the John Smith Stadium ahead of the big Huddersfield Giants game against Wigan Warriors tomorrow night. Look, in the studio, if we can call it a studio, in the suite, we've got a live audience. It's here from the live audience again. We have
rowdy bunch
on the panel. They are, aren't they? Calm down, guys. On the panel, we've got Club Ambassador Earl Crabtree, Giants legend, Super League star Michael Lawrence, and Club Coach Simon Wolfe. It's Simon. We've just been talking about your career, playing the game, and also making the transition into being a coach. I've got to say this. There was quite a few people that were talking about, at the time, the Giants' job being a really poison chalice. Anyone that came and took a hold of it just because of the way the team was performing. And us at the Pulse, we're friends of the Giants. I'm a former player. I've got Richard and Ken Davies gave me my first real job in the real world here, you know, and we had to tiptoe around exactly how the boys were performing. Was that a fear of yours coming into the team over here, or did you just thought, you know, here's an opportunity? I don't know. I'll leave it up to you. You answer.
No, look, it was definitely an opportunity. You know, I spoke to a few people in Australia, you know, got their advice, and, you know, they all said it's a fantastic opportunity. You can go over there and make a difference. Well, they were on the bottom of the ladder, so there was only one way to go. So I saw it as a real opportunity. I was confident that I could come over here and make some changes, and we could steadily work our way up the ladder. I didn't think we could do as well as we have over the last 3 or 4 months. I thought it'd take a little bit more time, and really, really my goal was to come over here and get the team ready for the middle eights, to be honest. I thought, you know, the top eight was maybe a long shot, but I got here, and like I said, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know a lot of the players. Obviously, the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to coming over, I watched a lot of games, did a lot of video on their training with Spug and Robbo and those sort of guys. So I had a fair idea of what I had before I got here, but once I got here and I seen their attitude and, you know, their willingness to work hard for each other, I was pleasantly surprised, and again, the way we bought in and the way we improved so quickly was a nice surprise. There's no doubt about that.
There was word coming out of camp that you were coaching from a distance. You were looking at a lot of video, but you also had you were a spy who had eyes in the sky, so to speak. So you were looking at flows and the way the patterns were running out by utilizing technology in regards to. What do they call those flying things?
Drones. Yeah, we were. Obviously, the time difference was a little bit tricky, but we would hook up 6, 7 o'clock your time. You know, we'd look at footage from the day before. Sometimes Matt, our IT guy, would send me the footage so I could look at it.
I'm just thinking, you should have made them get up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I should have.
Spuggy, get up at 3. That's when we're doing the video session.
Well, Spuggy wouldn't have been to bed, so that would have been easy for him. So, yeah, we did. We got in those 2 or 3 weeks when I was waiting for my visa to come through, we got a lot of work done, and I didn't have to come here and start from scratch. You know, Robbo and Spug and Bumper to an extent as well, they got things in motion well and truly before I got here. So, it worked well. It worked really well.
Michael, was there a pressure on at that time? New coach being signed, everyone's – it's this weird thing because it's the same boat, a bunch of blokes, but a new coach gets signed and all of a sudden this new – again, avalanche of energy comes.
Yeah, I think it was good. I think it was good for us at that time. Obviously, new coach signs, and it's like a fresh start for everybody, really. Everybody's got to prove themselves again.
But what I'm curious about is when you're on the pitch and there's things buzzing around over your head, does it feel like something sort of breathing down your back? Don't mess about,
yeah,
you know?
You kind of forget it's there till next
Stop
day,
playing Candy Crush. No, Kuma wasn't playing Candy Crush on the pitch side.
No, you don't really, you kind of forget you're being filmed whilst you're training. It's the next day in the morning in the review when we review the footage that you realise, well, you've slipped up or you've done all right, really. But, yeah, as you're playing, like, you know, when you're on the game, on the field, if it's a TV game, you kind of forget the cameras are there and it's just another game, really.
So you know that there's a four-week turnaround before Simon can come into the country. Yeah. Did things start to feel like it was changing then?
Yeah.
Or was there a feeling of change before that? Or was it when there was a little bit more direction? I know for me, as a player, I would have thought to myself, you know, until there's a lot of rumour, there's a lot of conversation going on around there. They're going to choose that coach, X, Y, and Z. And that always leaves a little bit of, I don't know, anxiety as a player because you don't know if you fit that coach's model of coaching. Mm-hmm. I know that he's got to put up with you for the time being, but that doesn't mean that he's going to play you. So for me, I know that I would have felt a lot more comfortable once pen had hit paper and it had been announced and we knew what exactly that we were getting. So what was the situation in the squad at the time?
For the squad, for myself personally, obviously, when Stunner got sacked, Spuggy took over as interim coach for the time. I've known Chris for years and years. He obviously played in the same team as him, so I had a lot of trust there. And
are you that old?
I'm not that old. I'm 28. I'm not that old. But obviously, played with Spuggy. And once he took over, he got the boys working hard for each other. We didn't really have much change in structure or anything really, but he got the boys believing and a bit more passion. And then obviously a couple of weeks after that, I think Richard brought Bumper on board, and that's when stuff started to change really. Bumper came in and he just watched for the first week or so. Just watched everything we did. And
spy.
Then, yeah, pretty much. And then,
did that make you nervous? Like, look at this guy. Remember, Bumper used to be one of the boys, but now he's come back as a spy.
Me and Leroy knew what to expect. Obviously, he was here when we was here under Nathan Brown, and we knew what Bumper was about. So as soon as he came in, we said to the boys, we're going to be fit, and it's going to get tough very quick, which was great for us. And that's pretty much what he changed as soon as he came in.
And look, I can bring Earl on this as well, or the whole panel. Look, that's an attitude thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
When you know you're someone who's going to flog you, and he knows how to get under your skin, and he'll flog you properly, it becomes an attitude thing then, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And the attitude changed, the attitude to work harder for each other. And I think we just got a little bit comfortable and complacent with where we were, and everything just went up, the intensity of training, competition, for sports with each other, and everything just went up a notch. And then obviously
I think he demands that though, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Like
Bumper, he's got that respect, and he's always had that respect from me. He helped me become an international, and I got so much time. As soon as I heard he was coming over, I was like, now we're talking. Mm-hmm. Now we've got somebody in place that knows exactly what he's going to do. You respect him because he is a great bloke. He knows what he's on about, and you believe in what he's saying. And I think that's half the battle. And in a game where you're putting your bodies on the line for each other, you need to respect the people above you as well. And I think that's a massive part of it, where he does get that respect and
now
demands that.
We all know him as Bumper. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but it's Mark Andrews, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mark Andrews is his Christian name, so to speak, his given name. Mark Andrews and yourself, Earl, has something in common. With me.
Oh, really? That sounds worrying. What is it? Go on.
I was going to say it. Oh, no,
wow.
Was it
a night out or something? I don't understand what's
You both done the haka with me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I kind of did a Macarena by looks of what I were doing. It weren't really a haka.
That's the fastest thing you've done in 10 years as well. But Mark played for New Zealand. Well, they called it the All Goals because the All Goals did come across and tour over here. And they had one Australian in it. This was right back in like 1908 or something like that. And then in 2008, I think there was a 100-year anniversary of that. And another, who was Stephen Price, who was playing with New Zealand Warriors at the time, was invited to join the Kiwis on that tour in 2008. And then they did a All Nations touch tournament, five-a-side touch tournament, and it was televised on Sky Sports. We do like other Sky channels as well. other sort of network, you know, we like other network providers. And Mark was the stand-in Australian that came in and represented Australia with the rest of the New Zealand internationals. And when we played Wales, I think it was in the final, Mark had to stand there on national TV and do the haka. He was shocking.
I bet his touch footy wasn't much better.
Actually, it was pretty. It wasn't great. I understand now why he why he's a trainer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he dropped the ball a few times. What was it like when Simon got here there?
Oh, yeah, it was good. Everybody, I think, bought into Simon's philosophies and the few things he changed with attack and defence. And I think that's half the battle. As soon as the boys buy in, that's the main thing. And obviously, we bought in. We did it in one game, we won. And I think the wins helped because it builds trust and it builds belief because you realise that whatever you're doing, it's working because obviously we're getting the results. And then the main thing, I think, was everybody had a clear role and everybody was accountable. So I reckon on the field now, if somebody's not doing the job, everybody else in the team knows that they've missed their assignment. And I think
the process.
Yeah, I think that makes us. I think that's what makes us made us a better team. Everybody knows the role, knows the job, and if you don't do it, it stands out like a sore thumb, really. And I think that's where we became successful.
And the systems fall down. I love it. All right, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we want to grab some questions from the floor. But before we do that, let's have a look at the roads.
On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show, live here in the fantastic suite at the John Smith Stadium, ahead of the Huddersfield Giants' big game against Wigan tomorrow night. What time's kickoff? 7:30? 7:45 kickoff all night long. All right, look, we're going to take some questions from the floor. The questions have been sorted out. Everyone's been writing their questions on air. I can't ask that question. Ken, why would you ask? I can't. It's a family show, this, mate. All right. Can we expect many reinforcements for next season? This is to Simon. Maybe we should start with Earl. You got enough money in the coffers, mate, to give to Simon so he can bring in more reinforcements? No.
After seeing what's been in the paper, I'm not so sure, actually. Hopefully. It depends who we're going for. Are we going to get some big names? It all depends. A marquee, we must have a marquee at some point. Sure, Ken's going to spend a bit of brass on that. Come on, Ken, you know
you
want to do it.
You're not going to try and encourage Big Earl out of retirement, are you?
He asked me this week.
I think we'd rather play with 16 rather than we're on the lookout. The squad will change again from what you see now. Come next year, we are chasing a marquee. We've missed out on a couple. But it's pretty volatile in Australia at the moment. There's a top 30. So a lot of players are going to get squeezed out. It's not like the old days where clubs could have 40, 45 players on their books. They can only have a top 30 now and they can only use players in the NRL season within that top 30. So there's a lot of good players constantly getting pushed out, looking for a new job. But so we're just going to be patient. We are in the market for a marquee, and we probably have room for one more on top of that as well. So hopefully things will pan out well for us over the next month or so.
Okay, so here's another question from Ken. Is there any progress with the idea of introducing reserve team football back at Super League level? I guess the broader question is, do you value reserve grade footy? And I guess this is a question that can be asked across the entire panel, but we'll start with you, Simon.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a real flaw over here. We spend a lot of time during the week, putting players out on loan and dual regos and all this stuff. And, you put them out on loan and they don't get played where you want them to play, and the next week they don't get picked at all. So it's really complicated, and we spend a lot of time.
There would also be different systems.
Yeah, different systems. Again, if you had a reserve grade team, it would be perfect. We could get a coach that would be implementing all that. Well, we train together most of the week anyway, so it'd be nice to have our own team that that could play together each week too. But I understand financially that's probably not viable for a lot of clubs, and from what I hear, they are trying to work towards that, but it would definitely be a lot better than the system we've currently got.
Okay. Michael, as a current player, what are your thoughts on a reserve grade?
Yeah, I think it's something that's greatly missed, really.
Have you yourself experienced time at another club on dual registration?
No, I've been lucky enough since 17.
What about other players? Have you, what sort of feedback have they given to you?
Yeah, I know there's a lot of boys that are out on dual reg at other clubs. Obviously, it's tough going to, you go do one run-through session and expect to fit into their system and play really well. I think if you've got your own under-21s or reserve grade, whatever it be, you can run your own style of play the same as the first team, and you get in a game every week. You can train all you want, but nothing compares to a game. So having that match fitness, keeping that ticking over, will keep you ready for when the first team needs you.
And there's a lot of rules too. Like at the moment, I mentioned to you earlier, we're struggling. We struggled to name 19 players this week. We're playing back rowers in the centres because we've got two players out on loan who aren't allowed to come back because it's too, the deadline's gone. So even though a couple of our own players would have been handy this week, they're not allowed to come back. So there's a lot of flaws in the system, and it would be great if we could get back to the genuine reserve grade team.
Yeah, that's how I got into the first team originally, is playing reserve grade. I played academy, and then the reserve grade coaches actually watched me, and they brought me up. So it was Alliance at the time, so they brought me up to the next level. Nice. Played that. And
oh, I mean, this is a few years ago.
You know
Alliance
all about
rugby,
that.
I do.
But
did
the
A team? That's where
loved
they used to call
it.
The A team. Yeah.
From
there.
Absolutely loved it. It was a great experience. That was when you got selected. You had incentives as well to actually play well. She got selected. To go, obviously, the grade above, and then if you...
No,
you
win
played,
bonus, LA.
Yeah. I did actually get a win
did
bonus,
you? Oh,
yeah.
Lucky and thing if you, in
if you, if you got into A team, you got paid more, and that's how it worked. If you were at academy, you got a win but no loss, and then you got a loss payment as well in Alliance. It was ace. And sometimes I double up as well. I was like, this is awesome. And then
but it was about the game. It was never about the money, was it?
No. Sorry, what game? No. But in all seriousness, I think it's ridiculous that we don't have that as our system. It's a massive part of what we do now. We need to bring as many youngsters through. I mean, if you see the kids now, the academy players, they're unbelievable. And, the walking off the pitch, and they're all absolute animals, the beasts of players, and then they just go missing. They get lost, and it's a shame because they can never carry it on, and they go off to work and do different things. They don't get that opportunity to carry it on. I believe it's something that needs to be funded. Obviously, that's the problem. It's all about cost, and we don't have that funding at the moment. It needs to be in place, and then we can start dragging a few more players through, because there's more, especially around Huddersfield at the moment. They're just going to the top four as well, the academy. There's strength in depth there, but we need to bridge that gap with a reserve grade.
All right, so I guess what we're all saying is, come on, Rob Alston, do your job.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, here's a question to Simon. How does the English game compare with the NRL? Now, we all know that the Super League has sort of been a little bit stagnant over the last probably 5 to 10 years. There was some great growth. There was great comparisons being made between the two highest levels of the game. But then it just seemed that the British game started to fall behind, which is, I guess, has been showcased a little bit in the World Club matches. Yeah. So where do you think the game is at this point, and where do you think it needs to grow to if it does?
Oh, look, I think the biggest difference with the English game is the way that the ruck is refereed and interpreted. I mean, obviously in Australia now you've got two referees, one constantly around that ruck area, so it's a lot cleaner. I said a couple of weeks ago, with the ruck over here, you get away with a lot. if you've got the ball, the way you play the ball over here is, you know, a lot of them aren't even an effort to play the ball, and they're facing the wrong way. And in Australia, that's heavily policed.
You're not allowed to do that?
No, you've got to touch the ball with your foot in Australia or make an action. So I think the way the ruck is refereed is the big difference in the game. It's a lot slower, obviously, because you get away with a lot more defensively. And, you know, there's talk maybe of two referees coming next year. So I think that'll be tidied up a fair bit if that happens.
All right. So you think that two referees is a real positive?
Yeah, I think so. When it was first introduced to Australia, there was two referees, and they would referee the game equally, but they found, you know, referees had different interpretations, and that was becoming a real problem. So they've now got a lead referee and a pocket referee, and that, I think that's worked a lot better.
So here's a question to all three of you. The new structure for 2019 was rubber stamped on Friday afternoon. How do you guys feel about it?
Great.
Yeah.
Thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I think it's the right thing to do. It's a weird time in the season to do it, and it's just typical of the RFL that we just do it like this, randomly.
Well,
like,
we can't blame the RFL. We can blame sort of the game, because it's all the different elements that make up the game. It's the RFL, it's a Super League body, it's the amateur clubs, it's the, you know, I think there was 57 or 55 votes that took place, and all of them had to have their say on it. So, of course, it's been the governing body that's been the steering the ship all of this time. But actually now, with the entrance of the Super League and the as a more of a standalone company with Rob Alston at the helm, it's sort of, we may end up blaming someone else now. You know what I mean? But again, everyone's thoughts on
it. It is the right thing for me. I think it's an obvious one. I think people can prepare a little bit better as well for the next year, and I just think that keeps a little bit more strength. But it's a weird one how it's all happened, but about time we actually did something, because it's ridiculous how we've been playing it.
All right, we're into the last minute of the show, so I just want to talk about tomorrow night's game. Wigan at home, everything to play for, Michael?
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be Hinch's last game at home tomorrow, so all the boys want to put a massive effort in for him tomorrow, and hopefully we can finish the year at home well with a win.
You don't want to, obviously, Wigan are flying high at this point in time, going to be a real challenge, but you all want the season to be finished on a real strong high?
Yeah, definitely. Everyone wants to finish the season well. And obviously, reward the fans with a good game.
And Simon, just quickly, what do you expect from the boys?
Oh, look, I just want them to go out and compete. That's all. We've had two or three tough weeks. We're down, you know, the troops are down, but in tough times like this, you need to stick together and you need to compete. And if we do that tomorrow night, I'll be happy.
All right. My thank you to everyone that's been on the show tonight and all the live audience. We love you. Watch the game tomorrow here at the Johnson Stadium.
And all previous Robbie Hunter Paul shows at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.